You're listening to a program produced in 2017 by Aloud, a series of dynamic conversations, readings, and performances that take place at the historic Central Library in downtown Los Angeles. Aloud is presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, which supports the Los Angeles Public Library. To learn more, please visit lfla.org/aloud. I'm very pleased to be able to introduce our special guest, Tim Weiner, tonight, an author who's known for his work on American intelligence and national security. In fact, introducing him this very week when, in fact, in just 2 days, former FBI Chief James Comey will be testifying in closed and open sessions to the U.S. Congress. Did I know this when I booked Tim? I'm going to just claim that I did. And I especially want to thank our board member, John Cook, for making both of these events today possible. Thank you, John. When the FBI confronts the power of the presidency, America must navigate uncharted waters. Tim will address the challenges that the confrontations we see unspooling before us every day pose for American democracy. And when we want to talk about and preserve democracy, as I mentioned, the public library is a great place to do it. So I'm glad we're gathered in this room in an institution whose very purpose is free access to information and ideas and open to all. Tim Weiner covered the CIA for the New York Times and worked in 18 nations as a foreign correspondent. His book, Legacy of Ashes, A History of the CIA, won the National Book Award for Nonfiction in 2007. His book, Enemies, A History of the FBI, in which he charted the ebbs and flows of J. Edgar Hoover's power and the accounts of incompetence that followed his death, is both an exhaustive chronicle and a thrilling read. One Man Against the World, The Tragedy of Richard Nixon, is a shocking look at what has been, until now, one of the most dramatic and disastrous presidencies in U.S. history. Even though in that book, as The Spectator noted, Weiner offers no opinions, just facts. I might also point out that Tim Weiner's books are not just shocking, they are oftentimes tragic comedy. It was Tim Weiner who said, after all, quote, "You should never chalk up to conspiracy what you can reliably attribute to stupidity." Because stupidity is a much more powerful force in the course of human events, and that is not a partisan statement. So we'll keep that in mind, too, as we navigate these uncharted waters. Tim is going to keep his remarks to about a half an hour or so, and then we will open up to questions from you. We would really appreciate if your question was a question. We'll circulate microphones and ask you to speak into them, and afterwards, Tim will be signing books in our lobby, courtesy of our library store, and please join me in welcoming Tim Weiner. Hi.
Well, I want to thank Louise. I want to thank, do you all know Mr. Cook? John Cook, if you don't know him, he is one of the greatest people in this city and God's gift to literacy in Los Angeles. And thank you all for being here. I have good news and bad news. Which would you like first? We're under attack. We're under attack. Our democracy is under attack. It's been under attack for more than a year by Vladimir Putin, his intelligence services, and possibly by Americans who have aided and abetted him. Who are they? We'll find out, won't we? We know, and we've known since the beginning of this year, the scope and the intent of this attack. It is to destabilize American democracy, full stop. And to destabilize Western democracies from the western border of Russia to the west coast of the United States right here. And Putin has won round one. And we're now in round two, and it's still going on. It's still going on. And the weapons are not nuclear bombers. They're not submarines. They're not commercial airliners turned into cruise missiles. They are cyberspace. They are Twitter bots. They are what we used to call propaganda and we now call fake news. And it was a sophisticated Act One, that is, which concluded more or less on November 9th, a sophisticated hybrid attack using every one of the available weapons that the internet offers, plus a lot of money. And what was unusual about this attack was that it was unusually loud. What I mean by that is that it's like they wanted us to hear them doing it. Several of the intelligence services chiefs have commented on this, that this was a very loud attack. On the 6th of January, in a rare harmonic convergence, every single United States intelligence service agreed that this was the nature of the attack, that the Kremlin was the origin of the attack, which left us with an interesting problem. This is the biggest and most politically explosive counterintelligence case since the Soviets stole the secret of the atomic bomb. The FBI was on the case. A counterintelligence case is different from a criminal case. If you're a counterintelligence agent at the FBI, as opposed to a criminal agent. Okay, a criminal agent sees a bad guy, wants to string him up. A counterintelligence officer sees a bad guy, wants to string him along and find out what he knows and who he's talking to and who knows who and to build a very complicated mosaic. It's easy. It's like you got a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle and all the pieces are black. It takes time. It takes patience. It takes a special breed of cat to do this kind of case. Now, if you find criminal activity in your counterintelligence investigation, like American citizen fill in the blank here has been taking money to aid and abet the spy operation, then you got a criminal case that you can bring in court. But counterintelligence cases can go on for years without resolution because the evidence that they gather is too secret to reveal in court. The sources and methods that we use to collect the information are, well, we all know what they are, okay? But if it's a secret and the United States government says it's a secret in the eyes of a court, okay? Like the National Security Agency, you've heard of it. Okay, the NSA was known for years as no such agency. Its letterhead was classified. Its location, it's right up Route 32 on the Baltimore DC highway, was classified. Okay, it didn't exist. Well, it does. Okay. In a case like this, you have not only the counterintelligence case, which is massively complicated, and you have a criminal investigation, but you've also got a trail of evidence that leads up to a certain address, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And there is one and only one agency in the United States that can investigate a case like that, and that's your friendly Federal Bureau of Investigation. Only they can do it. Only they can do what they've done over the last 50 years since the death of J. Edgar Hoover. We will not discuss him again tonight, I hope. Somewhere in a dark star chamber in the sky, pulling wings off flies. I'm sure he's looking down on us and smiling. But in the last 50 years, there have been five presidents who've either broken the law or bent the law and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to their breaking point. And in each of these cases, it's been the FBI that's come knocking at 1600 Pennsylvania. We will now do a short dramatic reading. The cast of characters will be familiar to most of you. They are the former Attorney General of the United States, John Mitchell, latterly the head of the Committee to Re-elect the President, also known as CREEP. The Chief of Staff of the White House, H.R. Haldeman, the Domestic Counselor, John Ehrlichman, the sitting Attorney General, Richard Kleindienst, the Counselor to the President, John Dean. 5 days in April, 1973. Saturday, April 14th. Nixon spends 7 hours in the White House talking until midnight with Haldeman and Ehrlichman trying to figure out what's going on with the grand jury investigation into the Watergate case. Howard Hunt, ex-CIA agent, arrested in the break-in, is going to break. He's going to flip. He's going to talk. Jeb Stuart Magruder, the number two guy at CREEP, he's broken. He's flipped. He's going to become a cooperating witness. And he's told his old boss, John Mitchell, that. As midnight approaches, Nixon asks Haldeman and Ehrlichman, "We don't just have the break-in, we've got the cover-up and the problem it presents and the peril it presents to the president. How many people know about this?" Nixon asks, and meanwhile, beneath his desk, the tapes are spinning. And Ehrlichman says, "There were 8 or 10 people around here who knew about this." Ehrlichman says, "Bob knew," meaning Haldeman. "I knew." And then Nixon, as if unconscious of the fact that the tapes are rolling, says, "Well, I knew." I mean, if you take Richard Nixon at his most delusional and paranoid, subtract 50 IQ points and add Twitter, what do you got? We'll flip forward a couple days. It's Tuesday, April 17th, so 3 days later. Ehrlichman, on tape. "The FBI has just served a subpoena on our White House police." They're in the building. On orders from, guess who? The number two guy at the FBI, Mark Felt. Better known as? The subpoena seeks the name of everyone who has been cleared to enter the White House on June 18th, 1972. Who doesn't want to release his White House logs and why? Wait, but I digress. June 18th, 1982. Nixon says, "Jesus Christ." Ehrlichman, "Now what in the hell?" Nixon says, "Where were we?" Haldeman, "What date?" Nixon, "June 18th. Haldeman, "June 18th. Ehrlichman, "The day of the bugging. It's the day after the Watergate break-in." Nixon, "I need someone around here as counsel." Haldeman, "And an attorney general." Nixon, "I need a director of the FBI." Who else needs a director of the FBI? Are we seeing a pattern here? With all due respect to Woodward and Bernstein, it was the FBI that brought down Richard Nixon. It was the FBI that secured the tapes. It was the FBI that got testimony from Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean. It was the FBI that presented the bulk of the evidence to the Senate Watergate Committee and to the House Judiciary Committee. And the bulk of the evidence that convinced the Supreme Court 8-0 that Nixon had to turn over the tapes. That was the end of Richard Nixon. But don't let anybody, you know, again, investigative reporting, great field. Done some of it myself. But it was the FBI that brought Nixon down. Woodward and Bernstein would still be covering the cops in Montgomery County if it wasn't for the FBI. And by the way, there wasn't just one Deep Throat. There were five. And they'd meet every week and they'd say, okay, you get Woodward and Bernstein, I'm going to get Sandy Smith at Time. You get Cy Hirsch. That was a handful. And they'd divvy it up and split up so that they'd make sure, because no one person could keep the complexity of the investigation in their heads. Fast forward. This happens every 10 or 12 years. The President of the United States, his National Security Advisor, and his National Security Advisor's gung-ho aide, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, decided it would be a really neat idea, that's quoting North, if they sold a ton of weapons to the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, overcharged them 600%, skimmed off the profits and backhanded it to the Contras, the anti-communist rebels, in Central America, in defiance of an act of Congress. Actually, it was a bad idea. A really, really, really bad idea. And they got caught. And when they got caught, there was one guy at the FBI who knew what was going on, the number two guy, Oliver Buck Revell. He's retired now, obviously, down in Texas. And Revell knows North, and he knows that he's a loose cannon. And he says, Ollie, this is before the deal becomes public, is this legal? And Oliver North says, truthfully, for once in his life, the Attorney General doesn't seem to have a problem with it. That was Attorney General Ed Meese. And so, when the story starts breaking, North and his boss, John Poindexter at the NSC, and Meese prepare a speech for the president to read. It's November 13th, 1986. And the president says, quote, we did not, repeat not, trade weapons or anything else for hostages, nor will we. That was a lie. He'd just done it. And the lie is quickly exposed. 9 days later, the FBI is searching Oliver North's office. They retrieve a document from his burn bag, which is an elaborately falsified statement about support for the Contras and where it's coming from. Oh, it's not coming from the millions we skimmed from the sale of weapons to the Revolutionary Guards in Iran. It's coming from over there, some other place. And they dust this document out of Ollie North's burn bag, and whose fingerprints do they find on it? The chief of the clandestine service of the CIA, Claire George. That's pretty good work. They further, in a feat that had never been accomplished before, ever, ever, ever in history, recovered 5,000 deleted emails from the National Security Council main server in the White House. Nobody had ever done anything like that before. And in the end, 12 members of President Reagan's top national security team, including the Secretary of Defense and obviously Oliver North and his boss John Poindexter, and the whole crew were indicted on a multitude of charges. And years later, Christmas week 1992, in the last week, month of his administration, they're all pardoned by President Bush. So, okay, they got away. But they didn't get away scot clean. The FBI comes knocking at the White House door again 10 years later, And this time it's to serve a subpoena to draw blood from the arm of the President of the United States in the presence of the White House physician. Why do they want the president's blood? Why do they want the DNA? The blue dress, that's right. You guys are good. Drawing blood from the arm of the President of the United States under a subpoena, that's deep. 7 years later, it's March 2004. A guy named Jim Comey is the acting Attorney General of the United States of America. He's the acting Attorney General because the Attorney General, John Ashcroft, is in the hospital with acute gallstone pancreatitis. He's had surgery. He's sedated. He's non compos mentis. Comey is the chief law enforcement officer of the United States. And side by side with him is the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Robert Swan Mueller III, known to his street agents as Bobby Three Sticks. And they go in and they confront the President of the United States. And they say, Mr. President, this Comey had just been read into the secret NSA program, Stellar Wind, right? Which was spying on Americans, right, left, and center. Emails, IP addresses, URLs, phone calls, just sweeping it all up. And Comey, being a good lawyer and a great American, in my opinion, and Mueller, being an even better lawyer, and possibly an even greater American, we'll find out, go to the President of the United States in the White House, and they look him in the eye, and they say, Mr. President, this program is unconstitutional. It violates the Fourth Amendment, and it's protection against unreasonable searches and seizures. And if you don't bring it back, you don't just have chalk on your spikes. You're way out of bounds here. Okay, and if you don't bring it back within the boundaries of the Constitution and the law, we are going to resign. In fact, Mueller had his resignation letter written out. He'd been up all night kind of perfecting it at his kitchen table. We're going to resign. And we're going to take the Attorney General with us. Now, what is the first thing that flashes through George W. Bush's mind? It's in his memoirs, and Comey and Mueller confirm it. What's the first thing he thinks of? The Saturday Night Massacre. It's an election year. And Bush says, that is not an experience that I wish to repeat. And they stared him down. They said no to the president. They said stop to the speeding freight train coming down the highway. That takes courage. That takes a respect for the law. Because they're about to have to say no to the president again. Both of them. It's a minor miracle. Sorry, I'm having a wardrobe malfunction here. You okay up there? Okay. It's a minor miracle that these two guys are going to be working in tandem again starting in 36 hours. Get up early, drink your coffee, eat your Wheaties. It's gonna be the most amazing testimony in the Senate since Joe Welch went up against Senator Joe McCarthy in the Army McCarthy hearings. Trust me on this. The President of the United States has not once, not twice, but three times publicly admitted to acts of obstruction of justice already. And it's only June. It took Richard Nixon and his crew 4.5 years to get to the point where we were talking about. It's taken Trump 4.5 months to get to the point where he fires the head of the FBI, who is investigating his White House, after telling him to drop the case against his deeply strange and probably crooked former national security advisor, Mike Flynn, and telling him to, like, just forget the whole Russia case. And then he fires Comey, and then the next day calls his two best friends, his new two best friends, Sergei and Sergei, the Russian foreign minister and the Russian ambassador, into the White House and brags about how he just got rid of Comey because he was a real nut job and this Russia thing was giving him trouble. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Oh, and did I mention the Russian ambassador? Sergei Kislyak? Sessions, the attorney general, testified under oath in front of the Senate in his confirmation hearing. I never met any Russians. Jared Kushner. Don't get me started on Jared. He's too busy solving the opioid crisis and bringing peace to the Middle East to be bothered with this, okay? But he's too busy. He's like, Russian ambassador? Who? Flynn. Okay. Is doing all this secret diplomacy with, and then they can't remember meeting him? Have you ever seen a picture of the Russian ambassador? Is that a face that you would forget? Why are they all lying? That's not funny. Why are they all lying? Are like Boris and Natasha creeping into the Oval Office at night and saying, tell them his plot, work of moose and squirrel. I don't think so. I think the president of the United States might be hiding something. And it's not just his taxes. But I don't know what it is yet. Because throughout all this history, okay, these five different presidents have been investigated by the FBI on five different occasions in the past half century. Usually you have the crime revealed and then the cover-up. Now we're getting the cover-up and we don't know what the crime is yet. What are they doing? Why are they all lying? Why are they hiding this? There is only one agency in this entire country that can find out, and that's the FBI. I keep having to pinch myself some mornings. And you know, did he tweet yet? What'd he say? What? He said what? Now, there are a couple of possibilities here. And, you know, I've been at this for 30 years, working the intelligence beat in different ways, in different places, in different forms, in books, for newspapers. And I keep coming back every time I'm confronted with a problem like this. We're at a point now, and I'm talking to you guys, okay? We, the reporters, we have to think like intelligence officers, and you have to read our stories like your investigative reporters, okay? How do they know what they know? I mean, the Washington Post did an incredible story a couple weeks ago in which they cited 30 unnamed sources. Read very carefully, okay? Because this is going to turn into, this is going to make Watergate look like fun and games. This is deadly serious business. Remember when Trump on the campaign trail said, I love WikiLeaks? You do? Really? Why do you love WikiLeaks? WikiLeaks' function during the last election cycle was to launder information that the Russians had stolen through cyber attacks from the DNC, from John Podesta, from individuals and from groups. They also hacked the Republican side, too. Okay? But they only released information that was damaging or embarrassing to the Democrats. And they laundered it through WikiLeaks. And then WikiLeaks spread it out into the political mainstream and infected the body politic. Okay? WikiLeaks was recently described by the new head of the CIA as a quasi-state intelligence operation. Okay, the state is Russia. They've been playing WikiLeaks and using them as a laundromat for the information that they stole. Julian Assange is not a hero anymore. Okay? Or he better not be in the eyes of Americans. He has conspired with Russian intelligence to damage American democracy, and he seems to be having a lot of fun doing it. Remember, okay, this was one of those moments. What's a time stamp on this? 6:35 a.m. What is this guy doing in the middle of the night and in the darkness before dawn? What is he thinking? Tapping out his tweets with his tiny, short little fingers. 6:35 a.m., March 4th. Terrible. Just found out that Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just before the victory. This is McCarthyism. 48 hours later, WikiLeaks dumps 8,000 CIA files in the mainstream. None of them have anything to do with anything. Obama did tap, whether he used 1P or 2, Donald Trump during the election. March 8, next day, the former director of the NSA, Mike Hayden, WikiLeaks is acting as an agent of the Russian Federation, quote, unquote. Mike Hayden, who is having run the CIA and the NSA, as you might gather, is not a leftist. But he is a patriot, said the other day, it's beginning, from Washington, it's beginning to feel a little bit like Nicaragua around here. And it really is, because the actions of, this is now Act Two of this complex, multi-headed, Hydra-shaped covert operation. They're playing him. The Russians are playing Trump. They set up this ridiculous meeting in the Oval Office with Sergey and Sergey. And Trump volunteers information that he has obtained. Hey, look at this really neat secret that the Israelis shared with us. They have an agent inside ISIS. How about that? What? He's now the leaker in chief. Lock him up. March 20, Comey confirms the FBI investigation, the counterintelligence investigation. It is a wide-ranging, complex investigation that is reaching across the country and obviously across the Atlantic. Because the Russians did this to the British, too, during Brexit. Who is this Nigel Farage guy? By the way, you know that famous picture of Mike Flynn sitting at the table with Putin? You ever notice who else is sitting at that table? A woman about 50 with silver hair. Who? That's right. What the hell is she doing there? Jill Stein, the head of the Green Party. Comey testifies 1 week later. Trump-Russia story is a hoax. He asks around him, he asks his attorney general, who, by the way, it appears has offered to resign twice in the past week. If I were him, I would move to a country like Ireland where we have no extradition treaty. But that's just me talking. May 3rd, Comey tells the Senate Judiciary Committee. And he tells the Justice Department that he needs more resources for this investigation. It's getting more complicated. It's going places that they never expected. He needs more money. He needs more agents. He needs more time. May 8th, 6:46 p.m. Okay. All the words are spelled correctly. The Trump-Russia story, the Russia-Trump collusion story is a total hoax. When will this taxpayer-funded charade end? Well, he knew how to end it. He fired Jim Comey a month ago. Nice work, Mr. President. Count one, obstruction of justice. Count two, and we'll find out a lot more about this, I hope, on Thursday, telling the FBI director face-to-face that he should drop the Flynn case, which is really the key to the whole thing. If they ever break Flynn in front of a grand jury, he'll bring down the temple. What is at stake here? Oh, wait, I left one out. Sorry. May 12th, right before he fires Comey. 8:26 a.m. James Comey better hope there are no tapes of our conversation before he starts leaking to the press. Really? Tapes in the White House? That's been tried before. It didn't turn out so well. I mean, does he have a Maxwell Smart shoe phone that he's using? Has he got a microphone in his briefcase? Is this Mission Impossible? What is he talking about? There are two possibilities. Stonewall Jackson lent his name to the language, because his strategy was to mystify, mislead, and surprise. His words. Well, it didn't turn out so well in the end for Stonewall. He was shot by his own troops and died. But he did lend a great word to the English language, one that was frequently used by Richard Nixon, as you may recall. I want you to stonewall it. Plead the Fifth Amendment. Save the plan. So there's that. He may be stonewalling, mystify, mislead, surprise. Or maybe he's just lying. Mark Twain once said, the great thing about telling the truth is that you never have to remember what you said. I don't think he remembers what he says. In fact, I'm offering an opinion here. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a doctor. But not knowing the difference between the truth and the lie is a legal definition of criminal insanity. What happens if there's a real crisis? Not a crisis that he has created, but a real crisis. And it's 6:30 in the morning or 1 o'clock in the morning. One of two things is going to happen. There are a couple people in the White House who have had very good reputations in the past. And one of them is the new National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, 3-star general. If he is given, if any officer of the United States military is given an order by the president that is unlawful or unconstitutional, he is to take his stars and throw down his stars and say, no, Mr. President. Just like Jim Comey and Bob Mueller said to Bush, no, Mr. President. So it may come to that. Or things may deteriorate to the point where Steve Bannon has achieved his dream of the deconstruction of the administrative state. The administrative state is the government. there are something like 500 confirmable positions that the president needs to appoint. And somewhere around 10 or 15% of these positions have even gotten nominated or filled. But I keep telling myself this, and I hope you will believe it too. We got through Vietnam. We got through Nixon. We got through the Iran-Contra imbroglio. We got through the Clinton impeachment spectacle. We haven't quite gotten through Iraq or Afghanistan yet. But we got through the threat to the Constitution that the illegal eavesdropping posed. And we'll get through this. I'm not quite sure how, but we'll get through this. Only one. We've been at this for 240 years. And we've had some problems. The Civil War. Haven't quite gotten past that one yet in a number of ways, have we? But in every crisis, we have somehow found our way through. As Winston Churchill famously said, "God bless the Americans. They will always do the right thing after exhausting every other possibility." And I want to believe that we are going to make it through this, possibly after exhausting a number of unpalatable possibilities. We're strong. We're resilient. But we've been at this remarkable experiment of representative democracy in America for 240 years, and we're still standing. Only one free republic in the history of civilization has lasted longer than 300 years, or up to 300 years. And that was the Roman Empire. Are we going to make it another 60? Yes, we are going to make it another 60. I don't know how. You and I will all be gone by then, but we're going to make it, okay? Someone needs to take his Twitter feed away. Someone needs to have a backup plan in case he really is criminally insane. And a couple of Republicans in the Senate need to grow a backbone. And the people of this country, I'm talking to you, John McCain. I'm talking to you, Lindsey Graham. Wherever you may be. And the people of this country, if they want, we can go muddle along through the next 3.5 years and survive somehow, or they can flip the House. And the Senate. And then it's going to get really interesting. Because you've got the predicate offenses for a bill of impeachment. He's already done it. He's confessed already. I'm obstructing justice. Look at me. I'm the President of the United States. I am bound and determined. And I think different people are doing their own thing in different ways, whether it's through writing, through political activism, just keeping a close watch on what's going on, even though it is head spinning. But let me leave you with a word of encouragement. I told you there was going to be good news at some point, right? Okay, I promised you. I know Bob Mueller a little bit. I've spent a couple hours talking with him. This is a great man. He is a man who has a very old-fashioned word, gravitas. Okay? He loves investigations. I mean, he loves them. He was born to investigate, this guy. And he's 72. He's in pretty good shape. And I believe that with the help of his successor, Jim Comey, that Bob Mueller is going to save the republic. Thank you. And it's going to be a lot of fun watching him do it, too. I can't wait to get until he deposes people. Oh, God, that's going to be great.
Hi, I just want to know why and how is he allowed to Twitter?
It's a free country. It's a free country. I'm a free speech absolutist. If he wants to, you know, solve the Saturday crossword in the New York Times on Twitter, fine, let him do it. You can't stop the president of the United States from tweeting. He can say whatever he wants. You know, what are you going to do, tie up his tiny little fingers?
Next question. Okay, I had to write this down as you were talking, but you regarding the Russia investigation, you said that the FBI is the one entity we can count on to do this right. And so I don't understand the technicalities. With Robert Mueller as special counsel, is that the equivalent of an FBI investigation?
It's complicated, but here's how it's going to work.
Okay, and then I have a second question, a follow-up.
Okay.
Or to that.
With the appointment of Bob Mueller as special counsel here, he's going to take basically the criminal side of the case. The FBI is then free to focus on the counterintelligence side of the case, namely what the hell just happened, okay? What did the Russians do? How did they do it? And did any Americans aid or abet them? If they find that Americans aided and abetted them, then that goes to the criminal side, to Bobby Mueller, and he prosecutes. But it's extremely arcane and complex, but counterintelligence cases are handled and prosecuted differently than criminal cases. You know that string them up, string them along divide that I explained? That's the basic difference. In a CI case, a counterintelligence case, you need to string them along to find out what the pattern is, who they know, who they work with. It's like a criminal conspiracy case, but 500 times more complicated because the deed's been done. So there are, last I checked, 5 different FBI field offices and headquarters office working on this case, and there's a concentration on the cybercrime and cyber espionage part. FBI is freed to handle that while Mueller looks at criminal cases under the federal criminal code, because you're not going to go arrest Sergei and Sergei. They have diplomatic immunity.
Okay, the second part of that then is there's so many people right now asking for independent investigations.
But Bobby Mueller's got it.
So that's... they're not necessary, in your opinion.
Keep calm and trust in Bob Mueller. That's what
okay.
I say.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was reading about possible money laundering of the whole Trump organization. Do you know
what? Trump do something unusual with money?
I just thought of that. No, I thought the Netherlands was looking into that whole thing. And does the FBI do that? Do they have to, can they investigate with the...
That is a very good question.
Okay.
The FBI has in every major American embassy in the world what's called a legal attaché or a legat. He's like the CIA station chief, okay, working out of the embassy. And he works in liaison with his counterparts in the host country, okay? When this thing was sort of building early this year, it was not just all the American intelligence agencies that were concurring in this judgment that Russia was interfering with the American democratic process. It was the German intelligence service, the BND, which is very good service, pound for pound. It was MI6, the British intelligence service, which is, again, lean but good. And interestingly, it was the Dutch intelligence service, which, as you can imagine, is not large. But they have a specialty, a house specialty, the Dutch intelligence service, which is money laundering. Has Deep Throat never said, he only said it in the movie, follow the money. So that's where the Dutch come in. And that's where foreign intelligence services come in, helping the FBI, which doesn't, you know, they speak Russian, but they don't necessarily speak, you know, Walloons or, you know, other exotic language. Yeah.
Next question.
A couple of months ago, Dianne Feinstein was noted coming out of a classified briefing to be white as a sheet. That was what the word was. How much do our representatives know? How much have they really been
More
told?
More than we do. There's a process that has been worked out over the years whereby if the head of the CIA, let's say, John Gannon, back in the Obama administration, had something that was just too hot a potato to hold, he would go to the Hill and brief what are called the Gang of Eight. And the Gang of Eight are the majority and minority leaders of the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, that's four, and the majority and minority leaders of the House and the Senate, so that's eight. And Harry Reid came out of a briefing in August that Gannon gave, and he wrote to Comey, saying, I know that you are sitting on information about Russia's interference with this election. Make it public. He couldn't. They were in the earliest stages of this, but believe me, John Gannon, the former head of the CIA, and Comey, they were twitching, okay, because of what they were seeing. So much so that they went to the Hill to brief the Gang of Eight. But they can't talk about it. It's too secret. But we'll find out. Let's all meet back here in a year and we'll review what we know, huh?
Next question.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm curious. Do you agree with Professor Lichtman that the bill of impeachment against Trump will include the charge of treason?
Professor who?
Lichtman. Alan Lichtman, American University. He's written a book.
Well, that presumes a couple of things. I know who you're talking about, and it's a reasonable question. The Constitution says that the president can be impeached for bribery, treason, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Treason is a pretty strong charge. They hang people for treason. And if there ever is a bill of impeachment approved in the House, which will never happen unless it flips from red to blue, and if that bill of impeachment is then voted up by the Senate, it takes a 2-to-1 vote, or it's 67 votes, I should say, in the Senate to convict. The process, you're all familiar with it, okay? It's like a criminal process in which the House is the grand jury that indicts and the Senate is the jury that votes whether or not to convict, okay? But the fact is, even though it looks like a legal proceeding, it's a political proceeding. And an impeachable offense is whatever the Congress says it is at any given time. If it ever comes to that, okay, there will be a host of high crimes and misdemeanors. Treason, I can't see it. Now, you could call some actions treasonable. If, let's say, for a hypothetical, the National Security Advisor delegate was taking a whole lot of money from a foreign power to influence American foreign policy and then not reporting it, that he was, in fact, a foreign agent of influence, and his name was Michael T. Flynn, U.S. Army Lieutenant General retired, you could make a pretty good case that that may be treasonable, but that's not the law under which it would be prosecuted. It's too arcane. I mean, you're like talking about the age of the Barbary pirates here.
Thanks again for doing this twice in one day.
I like the sound of my own voice, too. Thank you.
Since you're so deeply sourced within the intelligence community, do they share the level of concern that maybe is palpable in this room about what's going on in the country, and do they share perhaps some of the same optimism that you've, you know, shared with us today, that it'll get it resolved?
You know? Well, I don't know what everybody in the entire intelligence community of the United States thinks. I can guarantee you that. But I can also guarantee you when whoever it was, Hope Hicks or Sarah Huckabee Sanders or whatever mouthpiece it was, who said that, well, the president felt that the rank and file of the FBI had lost faith in Jim Comey. I don't have an obscenity strong enough to describe that, but I would use a barnyard epithet if I could. That's just wrong, okay? That's a lie, okay? The rank and file love Jim Comey. They might even love Bobby Mueller more. They're strong with him. So there's that.
Hi. I was very interested to see that the appointment of Robert Mueller seemed to be quite quick, and I wondered what kind of negotiation would he make to take that on? Obviously, it would be an exciting thing for him, but what would his terms be?
Let me tell you something important about Bobby Mueller. Robert Swan Mueller III, as you might imagine, was born to a family of high breeding and graduated from Princeton, and then went off to serve in the United States Marines as a second lieutenant leading a rifle platoon in combat in December 1968, which was a really bad time to be in Vietnam. Okay, and the Marines have an ethos that is different from the other armed services. If you are a commander and you order your men to go up the hill, you go up first. You lead them up the hill. Bobby Mueller, on a particular day, I think it was 11 December 1968, he and he alone went behind enemy lines to recover one of his soldiers who had been mortally wounded. And he himself was wounded. And he was awarded the Bronze Star for Valor for that. And, you know, he's a Marine. And the FBI and the Marines get along really well. Their main sort of training headquarters in Quantico, Virginia, are literally across the street from each other, south of Washington. So there's an ethos there. And, you know, somebody asked Bobby Mueller to do something for his country, he's on it.
Thank you for a great evening. I was
wondering. We're not even half done yet.
I know, we have a lot ahead of us, let me tell you. I was wondering, why hasn't more pressure been put on Trump showing his taxes? And do you think.
What are you going to do? Break into his accountant's vault? I mean, how much pressure can you exert if a man doesn't.
He's getting away with it.
Do you think this man respects the rule of law? I'm quite serious about this. This is an important question. Would Trump honor a subpoena? Or would he fight it, you know, unto the Supreme Court and win a 5-4 decision? We are in uncharted waters here, okay? Where the medieval mapmakers wrote, "Here lie monsters."
Is there any chance that Robert Mueller would have to recuse himself because the law firm that he was working at also represented, I guess, some of the Trump family?
Didn't represent the Trump
family. I was just going to elaborate on that question. In the California bar, an attorney cannot represent a client, such as the United States, for example. The concern, I think, I'm echoing that concern, is that Mueller's firm represented Manafort,
okay, can I cut you off? I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude. Robert Mueller has resigned from his law firm. Law firms are big places, I understand.
Oh, he's resigned?
Yes, he has.
Okay. However, his firm did represent Manafort and another person quite associated with the Russians, a Russian associate. And so he would have to, if he were in private practice, decline representation.
If he were in private practice, but he's not.
Yeah. So it's a definite conflict. That's a concern. There's a conflict.
This is an internet rabbit hole we're going down here.
Yeah.
This is not a material to the case. It's not. He's resigned. He's clean. He's got this.
Next question.
It seems that we're in dire times. We've got the Russians.
You got that right.
Doing things to us. But don't you think things like Citizens United, which has really got us with a House of Representatives that would never come up with an indictment for impeachment, are probably more important in terms of our democracy?
Let's stay within the realm of the possible here, okay, and not wish for what could be and is not and cannot be in the foreseeable future. Let's talk about what is in front of us and how to deal with it, okay? We've got a situation where our democratic institutions and our representative democracy is under attack. And I agree with you, it is not only under attack by a hostile foreign intelligence service. Decisions like Citizens United, obviously equating money with free speech, leave a sour taste in a lot, let's say, tens of millions of people's mouths, okay? But you can't unring that bell, okay? You have to work through the system. And believe me, I was born in 1956, okay? I'll be 61 this month. If someone had told me in 1968, you have to work through the system, son, you know, to get rid of Richard Nixon. Sorry about that. He's the president. But you're going to have to work through the system if you want to get rid of Richard Nixon. I would have said something unprintable, okay? But then, lo and behold, I'm 18, and Richard Nixon is in a helicopter flying off the White House lawn. And it was a great day. And there was a witness to that moment. The young member of the National Security Council, he's dead now, David Michael Ransom. He went on to become a very distinguished American ambassador in the Middle East. And he sees Nixon's, you know, he wanders into the East Room with everybody else, and he sees Nixon's, you know, maudlin farewell speech where, you know, he talks about his mother and everyone's crying. And it's a sad scene. So Nixon shakes hands with Gerald Ford and he walks over to the helicopter on the South Lawn. So this young kid, this 32-year-old kid on the NSC staff decides he wants to see Nixon's helicopter take off, and he goes out to, ever seen the White House? And very small porticos. People were smaller back then. On the portico with him is the White House chef, Hans Haller, who's like 6'8" in his tuck, and the Secretary of Defense, Jim Schlesinger. Rotor blades whirl up. Helicopter disappears into the gray. Schlesinger taps his pipe on the balcony of the portico and he says, "Well, it's an interesting constitutional question, but I think I'm still the Secretary of Defense. So I better go back to work." And he turns to the chef and says, "What are you going to do?" And the chef says, "I'm going to make lunch for the President of the United States." And this kid says, "Exactly. The king is dead. Long live the king." You know, this is what I love about this country, the guy says in his memoir. We may stumble, but we don't fall.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes.
I have a question about last-minute, you know, announcement by James Comey that he was going to investigate Hillary Clinton's or Huma Abedin's laptop. And can you explain that to me? I don't understand.
I can. But you're going to have to bear with me for a second. Comey was mousetrapped by the Benghazi email Hillary hunters on the Hill who had ordered him. And there's a reason that FBI headquarters is situated equidistant from the White House and the Congress. It's because they have to serve both. And the Hillary hunters on the Hill had ordered Comey, if any anything even like touches this investigation, if the needle moves one millionth of an inch after you say it's closed, you report back to us and that's an order. Well, he wrote the letter to the Hill, and a member of the committee, a senior member of the committee, who has recently announced his imminent retirement, apparently whited out the top secret classified stamp on the letter and sent it out to the press 9 seconds later. Unauthorized disclosure of classified information. But may I use an obscenity? Okay. I asked one of Comey's top agents, and in fact, I put the question to Comey indirectly through a spokesman, but I asked one of his top agents, like the assistant director for I Can't Tell You What. Okay. And he said Jim felt like he'd been handed a shit sandwich. Damned if he did, damned if he didn't. If he did, okay, the chances that representative who shall not be named was going to leak this were high. If he didn't, and something came out after the election, the FBI was doomed. It was a terrible no-win decision. Either decision he made was a bad decision. But that didn't throw the election. And the Russians didn't throw the election. It's everybody who didn't vote. It's everybody who did vote. It's on us, not him.
Next question. Is it just me, or does Mueller be the epitome of Dick Tracy? Just physically, I mean it in a positive sense.
You know, I hadn't thought about that.
One comment that you made about the Dutch.
Don't shoot, G-Man!
The comment you made about the Dutch and their specialty, as an open-ended question, what about the Israelis or the Chinese?
What about them?
Open-ended question.
What about them what? Finish the question.
Do they have any play in this? Do they have any inside information?
About the President of the United States?
About how the Russians have infiltrated.
Look, espionage is a dirty business. Do you understand me? Espionage is a dirty business. When you're an officer of the Central Intelligence Agency and you're working overseas, okay, your business is to induce people in a foreign country to commit treason on behalf of the United States, and to steal secrets from their military or their government or their diplomacy and hand them over to the United States, okay? It's a difficult, dirty, dangerous business, and people get burned. And sometimes people die doing this, okay? Dwight Eisenhower called intelligence an unpleasant necessity, I believe he said. And it's been going on forever. Okay? The Chinese have been at it since Sun Tzu wrote The Art of War and defined intelligence in three words: know your enemy. The British have been at it since Queen Elizabeth I. The Russians have been at it since Peter the Great. We've been at it since 1947. So, you know, we're still getting up to speed on some things here. But there is a reason that espionage is called the world's second oldest profession. Oh. I'm having so much fun. Let's take four more questions. Go ahead.
What do you make of the New York field office and their association with Giuliani?
I'm a New Yorker, okay? So first of all, I know Donald Trump. He's a con man. He's a grifter. He's a crook. I've never gotten so much applause for saying something so obvious in my entire life. Thank you very much. Giuliani is off his rocker. Okay? And if he thinks he knows what's going on in the New York office of the FBI, he is deluding himself and everybody else he talks to on Fox News.
Hi, you made the statement, and I tend to agree with you, only the FBI can handle this sort of case. But it's been speculated a lot that the intelligence agencies might have an axe to grind against the president for his lack of faith in them or for whatever went on. What is their legitimate role, and what do you feel their role in the final outcome will be for what happens to him?
It's important to note that the CIA has a very short charter, but it has a charter. And that charter says that the CIA shall have no police powers within the United States because Harry Truman said he wanted, quote, no Gestapo, close quote. The FBI doesn't have a charter. The FBI has never had a charter. Why? Because J. Edgar Hoover. What the FBI needs to, I was saying a little while ago that espionage is a dirty, difficult, dangerous business and people are going to get burned, okay? So is being an FBI agent if you're investigating the President of the United States. Whether you're in the FBI or the CIA or any of the businesses of the, I'm sorry, the businesses, the agencies of the United States that do secret work, you have to have a very good moral gyroscope in you. Not a compass, a gyroscope to keep your balance. Because you have to speak the truth to your fellow Americans when you are at work and you are dealing with secret information. Okay? And it takes a special breed of cat to do this work. And like I said, we've only been at it for 70 years. So we're working on it, okay? Do the FBI and the CIA play well in the sandbox together? Not always. There's a long history of conflict between these two agencies. Knowing the CIA as I do, because I've been studying it for almost 30 years, do they like having a politician put in charge of their agency? Not really. They would rather have a professional intelligence officer running their agency, but they find workarounds, okay? My point is this. The President of the United States called the CIA Nazis. Nobody likes being called a Nazi. And then remember the day after the inauguration when there were 750,000 people marching in the streets of Washington? The president goes out to the CIA and makes a really remarkable speech. It's a campaign speech. Do you remember the photographs of that speech where Trump is standing, you know, in front of the wall of stars? Did you notice that the first two rows of people in front of him were standing? They were. You know why? Because he never said, please be seated. This man thinks protocol is, you know, a stomach medicine.
So you mentioned that the importance of flipping the House and or the Senate. Outside of that, do you think there's a tipping point at which the Republicans either go ahead with impeachment proceedings or pressure him to resign?
If John McCain put his money where his mouth is, yes. You think John McCain likes Donald Trump? Neither do I think that John McCain likes Donald Trump. Does he talk a good game about well, it's a million-footed centipede, and every day another shoe drops off the centipede, and there'll be a lot more shoes. Get to work. Do your job. Run the Senate Armed Services Committee. He said, he himself said, John McCain, the last cold warrior standing in the Senate, said that what the Russians did to it was, did to us, and I quote, was an act of war. Get to work. He can bring a couple of other people with him, and then we'll get some business done in the Senate.
You know, and I know, and most of the people in this room know, and most of the people we talk to know what a dire situation this is. But there are people all around the country in the red states who probably
now,
have
don't
to be
talking about red states and blue states. Okay, okay? We're all Americans.
Okay. People all around the country who are probably less incensed and less mobilized to do something about that than we are. Now, how can, what will it take to get them to rise up the way other people are?
When they realize that they've been conned. Hey, where's my coal factory? Where's that coal factory he promised? Where's the steel mill that he promised us? Okay, where? There aren't going to be any more coal factories. There aren't going to be any more steel mills. Okay? They got conned, and they'll figure it out. I want to leave you with one last word. This political problem that we have in front of us is not merely a political problem, okay? Russia is not the only thing going on right now, okay? There is an attack on the judiciary. There is an attack on the press. There is an attack on the normal institutions of government. There's an attempt to, again, to quote Mr. Bannon, an attempt to deconstruct the administrative state. And you know what keeps me up at night? This. This is something that a fellow named Alexander Hamilton wrote. I understand he's undergoing something of a renaissance these days. Alexander Hamilton wrote in 1787, and I want to leave you with this. Safety from external danger is the most powerful director of national conduct. Even the ardent love of liberty will, after a time, give way to its dictates. The violent destruction of life and property incident to war, the continual effort and alarm attendant on a state of continual danger, will compel nations the most attached to liberty to resort for repose and security to institutions which have a tendency to destroy their civil and political rights. To be more safe, they at length become willing to run the risk of being less free. Be vigilant.
Aloud is made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the National Endowment for the Arts, and Errant Fox. Additional support provided by the Los Angeles Public Library, the Stay Home and Read a Book Ball, Sharon Oxborough, the Estate of Suzanne Aaron, Donna and Martin J. Wolfe, Julia Meltzer, and individual Library Foundation members. Media support is provided by LA Weekly, KCRW 89.9 FM, and KUSC 91.5 FM. Music by Boya Pongo. Support these free programs by becoming a member of the Library Foundation of Los Angeles. Visit lfla.org for more information.